Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Fishing Rights and Culvert Maintenance Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On June 11, 2018, the Supreme Court decided Washington versus United States, a case considering off-reservation fishing rights of multiple Native American tribes in the state of Washington. The 1854-1855 Stevens Treaties were a series of treaties between several Native American tribes and the state of Washington. As part of these treaties, the tribes relinquished land, watersheds, and offshore waters adjacent to a particular area, the Case Area, in exchange for guaranteed off-reservation fishing rights. In 2001, 21 tribes and the United States complained in federal district court that Washington State had been building and maintaining culverts that impeded the transit of mature and juvenile salmon between the sea and their spawning grounds. In 2007, the district court issued an injunction requiring the state to correct these culverts, and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit affirmed. The Supreme Court granted certiorari to address, 1. Whether a treaty, quote, right of taking fish at all usual and accustomed grounds and stations, in common with all citizens, end quote, guaranteed, quote, that the number of fish would always be sufficient to provide a moderate living to the tribes, end quote. 2. Whether the district court erred in dismissing the state's equitable defenses against the federal government, where the federal government signed these treaties in the 1850s, for decades told the state to design culverts a particular way, and then filed suit in 2001, claiming that the culvert design it provided violates the treaties it signed. And 3. Whether the district court's injunction violates federalism and comity principles by requiring Washington to replace hundreds of culverts at a cost of several billion dollars, when many of the replacements will have no impact on salmon, and plaintiffs showed no clear connection between culvert replacement and tribal fisheries. In a per curiam opinion, an equally divided Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Ninth Circuit. And now, to discuss the case, we have Lance Sorensen, lecturer in law at Stanford Law School.
There is an old birthday toast from early modern Europe, which says, "May you live as long as a lawsuit." The case of U.S. v. Washington, argued in the Supreme Court this term, is one example of such a long case. In fact, it has gone on for so long that Justice Kennedy recused himself when he realized that he had participated in an earlier phase of this litigation as a judge on the Ninth Circuit in the mid-80s, more than 30 years ago. His recusal led to a 4-4 split, which means the opinion below in the Ninth Circuit is affirmed, and it is that decision that I will be discussing today. The shorthand title of the case is United States versus Washington, but the full list of plaintiffs includes 21 Indian tribes and nations of the Pacific Northwest. The case provides a look into the interesting relationship among three sovereigns: the United States, the state of Washington, and the Indian tribes. A little bit about the background of this case. In the mid-1800s, as many white settlers were moving to the Pacific Northwest, Governor Isaac Stevens was the superintendent of Indian Affairs and the governor of the territory of Washington. He negotiated and entered into several treaties with multiple Indian tribes, and these treaties are now called the Stevens Treaties. And in these treaties, the tribes relinquished claims to large tracts of lands and agreed to locate onto reservations. Among other things, the tribes were promised the right of taking fish at all usual and accustomed grounds and stations in common with all citizens of the territory. So this allowed tribes to fish off the reservations in their usual and customary fishing areas. So litigation regarding the meaning of this language in the treaties and the language in the various treaties is almost identical across the board. The litigation's been going on since the early 1900s in various contexts. The present litigation revolves around Washington's construction of roads across streams and rivers in which salmon run. And these roads include culverts, which allow the water to pass, but often they do not allow the salmon to pass. The roads and culverts, therefore, have reduced the amount of fish the tribes can take out of the streams and rivers. The United States and the tribes argued successfully to the District Court and the Ninth Circuit that Washington's failure to locate and build the roads and culverts in such a way that would allow fish passage violated the Stevens Treaties. Washington's argument was that it was required to allow the tribes access to a portion of available fish, but not that it had to make sure there was a baseline of available fish. And the Ninth Circuit disagreed. Using the canons of construction for interpretation of Indian treaties, by which courts interpret vague and ambiguous clauses in favor of the tribes, and by engaging in a bit of historical research, the court found that the intent and purpose of the treaties was to provide a baseline amount of fish for the tribes, who use salmon not only for diet but also for religious ceremonies. Washington also argued that the United States, which builds and maintains its own culverts in Washington, should also be required to modify its culverts to allow for fish passage, many of which currently do not allow for fish passage. The court rejected this argument on standing grounds, stating that that argument belongs to the tribes and not to the state of Washington, and the tribes haven't made that argument as against the United States, at least not yet. As previously indicated, because of the 4-4 split at the Supreme Court, the Ninth Circuit opinion is controlling, and I think it's too bad that we didn't get a substantive decision from the court, because bubbling under the surface of this case are continuing issues of tribal sovereignty that the court will have to walk through eventually. There are two fundamental tenets of federal Indian law that are in tension with one another. The first is that tribes retain aboriginal sovereignty, and the second is that Congress has plenary power over the tribes. In this case, there is an interesting and unexplored dynamic going on, one which the state of Washington failed to raise and address, and I think represents a missed argument. That is, these treaties were entered into by the territory of Washington, which was effectively a department of the United States. Yet it is the state of Washington now that must shoulder the bulk of the costs for modifying hundreds of culverts, which will ultimately be over $1 billion. Washington, the state, estimates that it'll cost $100 million per year for the next 17 years to modify the culverts. I think Washington should have argued that the treaty was, in fact, entered into by the United States, not Washington, and that the United States should bear 100% of the costs. Think of how odd it is to have states bound by treaties with sovereigns. We just don't see that with foreign sovereigns, although we do see it with Indian tribes. Usually treaty making with sovereigns is conducted at the federal level, not the state level. Washington did argue that the United States should bear cost for culverts built pursuant to federal highway standards, but the court rejected that argument also. And to be sure, the U.S. will bear some of the costs, but not all. I think Washington missed an argument here. The justice who recused himself in this case, Justice Kennedy, is now retired. Since this was an actual decision of the court, albeit 4-4 per curiam, this particular case will not be coming back to the Supreme Court, but the issues of tribal rights and tribal sovereignty certainly will, and with a new justice on the court, there may be new dynamic or new opportunities to resolve some of these fundamental tensions in federal Indian law. I hope you enjoyed this short, brief podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with me, I'd be happy to talk with you more about this case or other cases involving Indian sovereignty. You can reach me at my email address, which is lfsorens@stanford.edu.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.